As Kiki grazed, I hauled myself higher, climbing until I reached my mother. I settled on a branch below her, but she appeared next to me in an instant, hugging me tight. When her body started shaking with sobs, I had to grab the tree's trunk to keep us both from falling. I waited for her to calm before gently pulling her away. She sat next to me, leaning against my shoulder. Her face was streaked with dirt where her tears had mixed with the dried mud on my clothes. I offered the one clean spot on my shirt, but she shook her head, taking a handkerchief from her pocket. Her dark green cloak had many pockets, and the garment had a slim tailored cut, eliminating the bulky excess of material. It wouldn't make a good blanket, but it was perfect for keeping warm while traveling through the treetops. "Is this one of Nutty's designs?" I asked her, fingering the cloth.
"Yes. Since I hadn't left the jungle in 14 years,
she gave me a rueful smile.
"I needed something for the cooler weather."
"I'm glad you came," I said. Her smile fled. A look of terror touched her eyes before she took a few deep breaths.
"Your father gave me some Elidine to keep me calm during the trip, and I was doing so well until..."
She put a hand to her neck, grimacing. "Bad timing," I agreed. "But I'm fine, see?" I held out an arm. "My mistake." She gasped, staring at the bloody bruises around my wrist. I pulled my sleeve down to cover them.
"They're just scratches." "What happened? And don't sugarcoat it for me," she ordered.
I gave her a condensed version with only a slight dusting of sugar. "He won't be bothering me again."
"It won't happen again. You are coming home with us," she declared.
After this morning, I wanted to agree.
What would I do there? "Help your father collect samples or help me make perfumes. The thought of losing you again is too much to bear."
"But you have to bear it, Mother. I'm not going to run or hide from difficult or dangerous situations. And I've made some promises to myself and others.
I have to see things through, because if I ran away, I couldn't live with myself."
A breeze rustled the leaves, and the sweat on my skin felt like ice. My mother pulled her cloak tight. I could sense her emotions as they twisted into knots around her. She was in a strange place, dealing with the realization that her daughter would willingly put herself in harm's way for others, and she could lose her again. She struggled with her fear, wanting nothing more than the safety of her family and the familiarity of home. I had an idea.
"Nutty's cloak reminds me of the jungle," I said.
She glanced down at the garment.
"Really?"
"It's the same color as the underside of an ilang ilang leaf. Remember that time when we were caught in a sudden downpour on our way home from the market, and we huddled under a big ilang ilang leaf?"
"You remembered?"
She beamed. I nodded. My childhood memories have been unlocked, but I wouldn't have them now if I hadn't taken a risk and followed Iris to the Avibian Plains.
"You've been to the plains?"
The horror on her face transformed to awe.
"You're not afraid of anything, are you?"
During that trip, I could list at least 5 things I was afraid of, especially getting my head chopped off by Moon Man's scimitar, but I was smart enough not to tell that to my mother.
"Then why did you go?"
"Because we needed information. I couldn't let my fear stop me from doing what I needed to do." She considered my words in silence. "Your cloak can protect you from more than the weather," I said. "If you fill the pockets with special items from home, you can surround yourself with the jungle whenever you're feeling overwhelmed or afraid."
"I hadn't thought of that."
"In fact, I have something you can put into your pocket now that will remind you of me.
Come on."
Without waiting to see if she followed, I climbed down. I hung from the lowest branch before dropping to the ground. As I searched my backpack, I heard a rustling, and I looked up in time to see my mother shimming down the tree's trunk. I found my fire amulet in one of the pack's pockets. Considering my recent run of troubles, the amulet would be safer with my mother. I won this during a time in my life when fear was my constant and only companion. I handed it to her. It was the first place prize for an acrobatic competition at Ixia's annual fire festival. What followed after was the worst time of my life, but I would have competed for the amulet again, even knowing the outcome.
I handed the amulet to my mother. This is one of only four items I hold dear. I want you to have it. She examined the fire amulet. What are the other three?
My butterfly and snake. I pulled out my necklace and I showed her my bracelet.
Did someone make those for you?
Yes. A friend, I said before she could ask more. She raised a slender eyebrow, but only asked,
What's the last thing?
I rummaged in my pack while I decided if my mother would be shocked to know I held a weapon dear. Far from being the perfect daughter, I figured she wouldn't be surprised at all. Handing her my switchblade, I explained what the silver symbols on the handle meant.
Same friend? She asked.
I laughed and told her about Ari and Janko. They're more like older brothers than friends. My mother's smile felt like the sun coming out after a storm.
Good to know there are people in Ixia who care about you.
She tucked my fire amulet into a pocket of her cloak.
Fire represents strength. I will keep it with me always.
Hugging me tight for a moment, Pearl pulled away and declared,
You're freezing. Put your cloak on. Let's get inside. Yes, Mother.
Esau and Iris waited for us in the Keep's guest quarters on the west side of the campus. I endured a bone-crushing hug from my father, but had to decline an invitation to dinner with my parents. My desire for a bath and sleep overrode my hunger. I had to promise to spend most of the next day with them before they allowed me to leave. Iris accompanied me to the bathhouse. Dark smudges lined her eyes, and she looked as tired as I felt. She seemed in a contemplative mood.
Did you use magic on your mother? She asked.
I don't think so. Why?
She seemed at peace. Perhaps you did it instinctively.
But that's not good. I should have complete control. Right?
I'm beginning to think that not all the rules apply to you, Yelena. Perhaps it was your upbringing, or the fact that you started controlling your magic at an older age that has made your powers develop in an unusual way. Not to worry, though, she added when she saw my expression. I believe it will be to your benefit.
Iris and I parted at the baths. After a long, hot soak, I dragged myself to my rooms. My last thought before drifting off to sleep was to marvel over the fact that Iris had trusted me enough not to assign more guards to me. It seemed a mere moment that I had sunk into a dreamless slumber when Iris's mental call woke me. I squinted in the bright sunlight, trying to orient myself.
What time? I asked her.
Mid-morning, Iris said.
Morning? That meant I had been asleep since yesterday afternoon. Why did you wake me?
An emergency council session has been called, and your presence is required.
Emergency session?
Gol was murdered, and Cahill is claiming advisor Ilum is Valak in disguise.
Chapter 28.
Gol murdered? Valak caught?
My groggy mind couldn't quite understand Iris's comment, and her attention pulled away before I could question her. I changed as fast as I could and ran toward the council hall.
Did Valak kill Gol?
And if Valak really was in custody, he just gave the Sissians one more reason to execute him. Should I act surprised by Valak's presence, or admit I knew about him?
Would I be considered an accomplice to Gol's murder? Perhaps they suspected me.
I only told Iris where to find him. I hadn't mentioned the others to her. Questions without answers swirled in my mind. I paused before the steps to the council hall, smoothed my braid, and adjusted my clothes. I wore one of the new shirts and skirt pants that Nutty had sewn for me. Glancing at my surroundings, I checked to make sure no one had followed me. Iris trusted me to take care of myself. I couldn't let her down. The council's members, four master magicians, a handful of the Keep's guards, and Cahill had assembled in the great hall. The noise of their various arguments reached deafening levels, and I spotted Cahill gesturing wildly to the Sand Seeds councilman. Cahill's flushed face contorted in anger as he replied. Rose Featherstone, first magician, pounded a gavel to bring order to the meeting. Conversations ceased as the counselors took their seats.
The decorations from the greeting ceremony had been removed, and a U-shaped table had been brought in. Rose and the other three magicians sat at the bend, while the clan elders sat along the straight sides. Six on one side, five on the other, with Cahill taking the sixth seat. A wooden podium had been placed in the middle of the U. I stood with the captain of the guard and his men near the side wall, hoping to blend in with the white marble.
"Let us address the matter of Lieutenant Goal Ixia," ordered Rose.
I glanced at Iris in surprise.
"All the northern refugees are given Ixia as their clan name," Iris explained in my mind. "Cahill is considered their clan leader. It is an honorary clan and title. He has no lands and no power to vote in the council."
That explained Cahill's resentment toward the council and his continuing frustration of not getting their support for his campaign against the commander.
"Lieutenant Ixia was found dead in a fallow field east of the citadel in Featherstone clan lands," Rose recited. "The healers have determined that he was killed with a sword thrust through his heart."
Murmurs rippled through the council members. Rose stopped them with a cold stare.
"The weapon was not found at the scene, and a search of the surrounding fields is currently in progress. According to Fourth Magician, Yelena Liana Zaltana was the last person to see him alive. I call her to the witness stand."
16 pairs of eyes turned toward me. Hostile, concerned, and worried expressions peppered the group.
"Don't worry," Iris said in my mind. "Tell them what happened."
I walked to the podium, guessing that was the witness stand.
"Explain yourself," Rose demanded.
I told them about the kidnapping and my escape. A collective gasp sounded when I explained about taking control of Goal's body. Whispers about the ethical code started to spread.
Iris stood and said, "There is nothing illegal about using magic to defend yourself. In fact, she should be commended for extracting herself without harming Goal."
The council members asked an endless amount of questions about Goal's motives. Only after the guards that had been assigned to protect me confirmed they had been drugged did the council run out of inquiries.
"You left Goal chained in the shed, and that was the last time you saw him?" Rose asked.
"Yes," I said.
"She's telling the truth."
By Rose's sour expression, I knew that statement had been hard for her to say.
"The investigation into Goal's murder will continue. Yelena, you may sit down."
Rose gestured to a bench located behind her and the other master magicians.
"That leaves us with the other matter. I call Cahill Ixia to the witness stand."
As I moved toward the bench, I passed Cahill. His blue eyes held a hard determination, and he refused to meet my gaze. I sat on the edge of the wooden bench, and even though I braced myself for his accusations, Cahill's words made my heart squeeze with fear.
"And compounding Valak's deception is the fact that his soulmate and master spy is Yelena Zaltana."
The room erupted with a cacophony of voices. Rose pounded her gavel, but no one listened. I felt the force of her magic when she ordered everyone silent. She held them quiet for only a moment, but it was enough to get her point across.
"Cahill, where is your evidence?" Rose asked.
He motioned to one of the keep's guards. The guard opened a door in the back wall, and Captain Marek and four of Cahill's men entered the hall, dragging Advisor Ilum with them. Ilum's arms were manacled behind his back, and the four guards had their swords pointed at him. Ambassador Signe and a handful of Ixian soldiers followed the grim procession. I strained to catch Valak's eye, but he looked at the council members with an annoyed frown. Ambassador Signe was the first to speak.
"I demand an explanation. This is an act of war."
"Cahill, I told you to release the advisor until this matter was settled," Rose said.
Fury flared in her amber eyes.
"And let him escape? No. Better to bring him here and unmask him in front of everyone."
Cahill strode to Ilum and yanked on his hair. I cringed, but Ilum's head jerked down as he cried out in pain. Undaunted, Cahill pulled Ilum's nose, then clawed at the flesh under his chin.
Ilum yelped, and blood welled from the scratches on his neck.
Cahill stepped back, astounded. He reached toward Ilum's face again, but Marek grabbed him and held him.
Cahill's mouth hung open with astonishment.
"Release the advisor," Rose ordered.
Ilum's manacles were removed as Cahill, his face red with rage, and his men were escorted from the room.
The session ended, and Rose rushed to make amends and apologize to the ambassador and Ilum.
I stayed on the bench, watching as Signe's anger and Ilum's pout transformed into more agreeable expressions by Rose's words. I was afraid to call attention to myself, hoping no one would remember Cahill's other accusations about me.
Cahill's shock over Ilum had matched my own.
Even knowing his tricks, Valak continued to surprise me.
I scanned the Ixian guards, and, sure enough, one blue-eyed soldier looked mighty pleased with himself. Ilum probably dressed as a guard when Valak disguised himself as the advisor, and they probably switched places when Valak needed to sneak around Citya. Eventually, the council members and Ixians began to leave. Iris joined me on the bench.
"Tell Valak to leave," Iris said, mentally connecting. "The danger is too great."
"You know."
"Of course. I expected him to be with the delegation."
"It doesn't bother you that he's here, that he might be spying on Citya."
"He's here for you, and I'm glad you had some time together."
"But what if he killed Gol?"
"Gol was a danger to you. While I would have preferred to arrest him, I am not upset by his demise." "Go get something to eat. You look a little pale," Iris said to me out loud.
That's just great. I went from having none to having two mother hens.
Iris laughed.
"Some people just need the extra help."
She patted my knee and went in search of Bane. Before I could leave, though, I saw Bavol Zoltana heading toward me. I waited for him.
"Ambassador Signe requests a meeting with you," Bavol said.
"When?"
"Now."
Bavol led me out of the Great Hall.
"The ambassador has been assigned some offices so she can conduct business while a guest here," Bavol explained as we walked through the council hall.
The entire Sishan government was housed in the vast building. Offices and meeting rooms hummed with the daily tasks of running a government. An underground record room stored all the official documents, although the local records remained at each clan's capital.
I wondered about the Sandseed's moving capital. Did they haul their records with them as they traveled throughout the plains?
Remembering Iris's lecture about the Sandseeds, I realized they kept a verbal record, telling history through the story weavers. An image of Moon Man painted blue and sitting in the council's underground room caused me to smile.
Bavol gave me a questioning glance.
"I was thinking of the record room," I said, "just trying to imagine how the Sandseed clan reports information to the council."
Bavol grinned.
"They have always been difficult. We indulge their unusual ways. Twice a year, a story weaver comes to the council and recites the clan's events to a scribe. It works, and keeps peace in our land. Here we are."
Bavol gestured to an open door.
"We will talk again later."
Bavol dipped his head and shoulders in a half bow and left.
The invitation had not included Bavol.
I walked into a receiving area. Advisor Ilum sat behind a plain desk.
The scratches on his neck had stopped bleeding. Two soldiers guarded a closed door.
Ilum stood and knocked on the door. I heard a faint voice, and Ilum turned the knob.
"She's here," he said,
then pushed the door wider and gestured me inside. I entered Ambassador Signe's office, noting the simple, functional furniture and lack of decorations. Guards stood behind her, but she dismissed them.
None of the soldiers had been Valak, and I wondered where he had gotten to. Ari and Jenko were probably off duty.
"You caused a considerable stir last night," Signe said when we were alone.
Her powerful eyes scanned me.
I marveled at her appearance. She had the same delicate features as the commander, yet the long hair and the thin lines of kohl around her eyes transformed his face into her ageless beauty.
"I hope your sleep wasn't interrupted," I said, sticking to a diplomatic approach.
She waved away comment.
We're alone. You may speak freely.
I shook my head. Master magicians have excellent hearing. I thought about Rose. She would consider eavesdropping on the ambassador to be her patriotic duty. Signe nodded in understanding.
Seems the wannabe king has gotten hold of some wrong information. I wonder how that happened.
A miscommunication between several parties.
There will be no more false accusations?
Signe asked. Her gaze pierced me as if she held a knife to my throat. She wondered at my ability to keep her disguise a secret. No. I showed her my palm, pointing to the scar she had made when I promised not to reveal the commander's secret to anyone. Not even to Valak. That thought reminded me of Iris's suggestion that Valak leave Citya. I pulled my butterfly pendant out. Some rumors tend to smolder, and it would be best to make certain there is no fuel left to ignite another fire. Signe had to know about Valak.
I will take that under advisement. However, I had another matter to discuss with you.
Signe pulled a sheet of parchment from her black leather briefcase. She rolled it up and held it in her hand.
The commander has sent a message for you. He has thought in depth about your last conversation with him. He decided that the advice presented was valid, and would like to thank you for the suggestions.
Signe handed me the paper roll.
An invitation to come visit us when your magical training is complete. We are planning on returning to Ixia in a week's time, she said. Your response is required before we leave.
A dismissal. I bowed to the ambassador and left her office. I puzzled over her words as I headed toward the keep. The commander had signed an order of execution. Visiting Ixia would be suicide. I waited until I had a warm fire lit in my rooms before unrolling the commander's message. Staring at the dancing flames, I contemplated Commander Ambrose's offer. I held the order for my execution in my hands. But tossing it into the fire would not be a simple act. A brief note had been written on the document. Prove my loyalties to Ixia, and the order would be nullified. Show the benefits of having a magician working for Ixia to the Ixian generals, and an advisor's position would be mine. Do these things and I could return to Ixia. Return to my friends. Return to Valak. Without knowing it, Cahill had seen my possible future when he had called me a master spy at the council session. Chapter 29. I gazed at the fire as my conflicting emotions, my conflicting loyalties, and my conflicting desires all burned and danced in my chest, mimicking the flames. Coming no closer to a decision, I hid the execution order in my backpack. It might be better to think about it later. Remembering my promise to my parents, I headed toward the dining hall, hoping I would find them eating lunch. Along the way, I encountered Dax.
Yelena, he said, falling in step with me. Haven't seen you in days.
I'm sure you're just dying to tell me all the campus gossip about me, right?
I do have a life. Maybe I've been too busy to listen to rumors, he huffed, pretending to have hurt feelings.
I looked at him. He sighed.
Okay, you win. I'm bored out of my skull. Second magician is busy playing detective, and Gelsey is neck deep in some project and I never see her anymore.
Dax paused dramatically.
My life is so boring that I have to live vicariously through your adventures.
And since the rumors are so accurate,
your adventures have turned into legends.
He swept his arms wide, laughing.
So where are you off to now? Going to slay a dragon? Can I tag along as your lowly squire? I'll polish your staff of power every night with my shirt, I promise.
I'm glad my problems are keeping you entertained, I said with some sarcasm. I'm searching for my, for the tree king and his queen. We're going to plan our attack against the evil tree varmints who have assembled an invisible army in the keep. Dax's eyes lit up.
I heard about the tree queen's adventures this morning.
The game soured. I didn't want to hear the students' gossip about my mother. Before Dax could elaborate, I invited him to tag along. I found my parents in the dining hall and we joined them. While we ate, Dax's presence worked to my advantage.
The topic of conversation stayed on school and horses and mundane matters, giving my parents no chance to question me about the council session. And when my mother offered to distill a special cologne for Dax, I knew she was glad I had found a Sishan friend. After saying goodbye to Dax, I went to the guest quarters with my parents. As Pearl brewed some tea in the small kitchen, I asked Esau about the curare. Iris had told him about the drug when she feared Ferda had kidnapped me. He ran a calloused hand over his face.
"I never thought it would be used like that," he said, shaking his head. "When I discover something new, I always experiment with it until I know all the side effects and know how the substance could be used or abused. Then I weigh the good against the bad. Some discoveries never see the light of day, but for others, even though they might not be perfect, the benefits outweigh the risks."
Esau stopped speaking when Pearl entered the room carrying a tray of tea. The warning in my father's eyes told me that my mother didn't know about Ferda's gruesome use of the curare. She served the tea and sat close to me on the couch. She had worn her cloak during lunch, but had removed it when we entered their suite. "What happened at the council session?" she asked me. I gave them a watered-down version of Cahill's accusations against Advisor Illum. Pearl's hand flew to her neck when I mentioned Valak's name, but she relaxed when I told her Cahill had been proven wrong. Neglecting to mention Cahill's claims about my involvement with Valak, I informed them about Gol's murder. "Good," Pearl said. "Saves me the effort of cursing him." "Mother," I was astonished. "Can you do that?" "Perfumes and scents are not the only things I can concoct." I looked at Esau. He nodded his head.
"Good thing Rayad and Mogkin were already dead. Your mother has quite the imagination when she's angry."
I wondered what other surprises I would discover about my parents. Changing the subject, I asked about their journey to the keep and about the Zoltana family, spending the day with them as promised.
When the hour had grown late, Esau offered to escort me to my rooms. At first I declined. I hadn't been assigned guards since the episode with Gol.
When he insisted and when Pearl frowned, I remembered her comment about curses, and not wanting to be a target of her ire, I agreed. The campus atmosphere hung silent and empty. Moonlight glistened off the ice-coated trees. Only 4 more days until the full moon. My hand found Valak's snake, and I twisted the bracelet around my arm. When we were halfway to my rooms, Esau said,
"I need to tell you another thing about curare."
"There's more?" He nodded.
"The stinging nettle plant was the reason I sent the shipment of curare to the sand seeds before I finished all my experiments on the drug. The plant grows in the Avibian Plains, and the sting causes unbearable pain for many days. It's usually the children who wander into a patch without realizing it. In low doses, curare is excellent for numbing the wound. It had never occurred to me that someone would use high doses of curare to paralyze the entire body."
Esau frowned, running a hand through his shoulder-length gray hair.
"Later, I discovered another side effect that seemed minor at the time. But now..."
Esau stopped and turned to me.
"At high doses, the curare will also paralyze a person's magical abilities."
I felt the blood drain from my face. That meant curare could render even a master magician completely helpless.
Tomorrow night was the time of the secret exchange.
Since I had taken over Gol's body with my magic, I planned to take over Ferda's, believing that even if I was incapacitated by the drug, I could still use my magic. It now seemed imperative that I avoid getting shot with curare.
My father must have seen the horror in my eyes. "There is an antidote of sorts," he said.
"Antidote?"
"Not a complete reversal, but it does free the magic and return some feeling, although it creates some new problems."
Esau shook his head in frustration.
"I haven't been able to experiment with it fully."
"What is it?"
"Theobroma."
That explained the new problem. Eating the brown sweet would open my mind to magical influences. My mental defenses would not work against another magician, even one weaker than me. "How much theobroma would I need?" I asked my father.
"A lot. Though I could concentrate it," he mused.
A chill wind blew through me. Shivering, I pulled my cloak tighter as we continued our walk.
It wouldn't taste as good, but it would be a smaller quantity, Esau said.
Can you do it by tomorrow afternoon? I asked. He stared at me. A worried concern filled his kind eyes.
Are you going to do something that I shouldn't tell your mother about?
Yes.
Important?
Very. My father considered my request.
When we arrived at my rooms, he gave me a hug. Do you know what you're doing?
I have a plan.
Yelena, you managed to find your way home despite the odds. I'll trust that you'll prevail again. You'll have the antidote by tomorrow noon.
He stood in my doorway like a protective bear while I searched inside. Satisfied that I was safe, he said goodnight and headed back to the guest quarters.
I lay in bed and mulled over the information Esau had given me.
When my shutters swung wide, I sat up, grabbing my switchblade from under the pillow. Valak climbed through the window with a lithe grace, dropping without a sound onto my bed. He locked the shutters, then joined me.
You need to leave. Too many people know you're here, I said.
Not until we find the killer. And besides, the commander ordered me to protect the ambassador. I would be remiss in my duties if I left. What if she ordered you home?
I turned so I could see his face.
The commander's orders overrule all others.
Valak, did you?
He stopped my question with a kiss.
I needed to discuss many things with him.
Gol's death and the commander's offer. But once his body molded to mine, and his musky scent reached my nose, all thoughts of murder and intrigue evaporated.
I pulled at his shirt.
He smiled with delight.
Our time together was limited, and I didn't want to waste the night on words.
When I woke in the semi-darkness of sunrise, Valak was gone, but I felt energized. My rendezvous with Ferda was scheduled for midnight, so I reviewed the plan as I went through my day.
Iris had wanted me to try to move objects again with my magic for my morning lesson.
I had yet to manage that skill. But I asked if we could work on strengthening my mental defenses.
If I had to resort to using Esau's antidote, I wanted to be able to produce a strong enough barrier that might block his magic, even while under the influence of the Theobroma. Before dismissing me for the day, Iris asked,
Are you still feeling tired from your encounter with Gol?
A little. Why?
She gave me an ironic smile.
You've been pestering me about the search for Opal every day for the last week, yet no questions today.
I assumed you would tell me any news.
We've reached a milestone, Iris declared. You're learning to trust us.
Then the humor in her eyes dulled.
No news. We don't think they're in the Citadel or the plains, so now we're widening the search area.
Feelings of guilt squeezed my chest as I hurried to find my father.
I had wanted to work with Iris and the others, but now I planned to meet Ferda with just Valak backing me up.
Granted, Valak equaled four armed men, but I hadn't confided our plans to her. A true Sishan would present the information to the Council.
But why didn't I trust Iris?
Because she wouldn't let me go to the rendezvous. The danger to Citia was too great. But trying to ambush Ferda wouldn't work without me there. Iris believed they would find him eventually, and sacrificing Opal was a small price to pay for Citia. I believed that risking all was the only way to stop him. Knowing the risks and trying to minimize them would be the key.
Iris didn't believe in my abilities to capture Ferda, but I had kept Rose, the most powerful magician in Citia, from extracting my innermost thoughts.
I had healed Tula's body and found her consciousness.
I had taken over Gol's body, and would soon have an antidote to Curare.
Trust needed to go both ways.
Loyalty, too.
Did I feel any loyalty?
To Iris, yes. But to Citia? I couldn't say. Even if we succeeded in rescuing Opal and capturing Ferda, Iris would cease my lessons. That grim thought led me to contemplate my future and the commander's offer.
Iris would sever our relationship, and I would have no obligations to Citia.
I could tell the commander about Cahill and his plans to build an army to overthrow Ixia.
Cahill, that weasel, had no qualms about telling the council of my connection with Valak.
My father waited for me outside the guest quarters. He had concentrated the theobroma into a pill the same size and shape as a robin's egg.
I coated it with a gelatin that will keep it from melting, Esau explained.
Melting?
How would you eat it if you're frozen with curare?
When my eyes widened in sudden understanding, he said,
You can hold this pill between your teeth. If you're pricked with the curare, just bite down on it and try and swallow as much as you can before your jaw muscles become paralyzed. Hopefully the rest will melt and slide down your throat.
Before learning about this antidote, my main goal had been to not get hit with curare at all.
If I willingly went to Ferda, he shouldn't need to use it.
Or so I'd hope.
Esau's pill made me even more confident about the rendezvous tonight, and he had given me an idea. I borrowed a few other items from my father.
I spent the remainder of the afternoon practicing self-defense with Zatora. And after dinner with my parents, I went to the barn. Everything about the day seemed odd, as if I did things for the last time. Perhaps the feeling was due to the fact that my life would be different after tonight.
Kiki sensed my mood.
Lavender Lady sad.
A little.
I led Kiki from her stall and groomed her.
Usually I talked to her, but tonight I worked in silence.
I go with Lavender Lady.
Surprised, I stopped brushing.
I had thought my connection with Kiki only involved emotions and simple communication.
She discerned my feelings and possessed certain instincts like when I had been threatened by Goal.
But until now, I had believed she didn't know why.
It would be suspicious if I take you.
Take me to smelling distance. Lavender Lady needs me.
I pondered her words as I put the grooming brushes away.
Cahill hadn't come to the barn for my lesson.
I wasn't surprised.
Guess I would practice on my own. But how to get onto Kiki's back without a saddle or a boost up?
Grab mane. Hop. Pull.
Kiki, you're full of advice tonight.
Smart, she agreed.
As we rode around the pasture, I realized the value of her offer.
I would take her along and let her graze in the plains.
The exchange site was set at the only location in the plains that I knew, Blood Rock.
My skin crawled when I contemplated how Ferda had gotten that information.
Ferda's image and thoughts still frequented my nightmares, and I wondered if I had inadvertently formed a mental connection with his mind.
His desire to possess me haunted my dreams.
I no longer ran from the snakes.
Instead, I waited for their tight embrace, welcoming the oblivion of their bites.
My dream actions became as disturbing as Ferda's.
Kiki switched to a trot, jarring me from my thoughts.
I concentrated on maintaining my balance.
When my legs and back began to ache, she stopped. After giving Kiki a quick rubdown, I led her back in her stall.
See you later, I said, heading toward my rooms to prepare for the exchange. My confidence soured to nervousness as the darkness advanced over the sky.
Trust, Kiki said. Trust is peppermints.
I laughed. Kiki viewed the world through her stomach. Peppermints were good. Therefore, trusting another was also good.
Valak waited for me in my rooms. His stiff expression resembled a metal mask.
A cold sheen covered his eyes, his killer's gaze.
Here. He handed me a black turtleneck shirt and black pants. They're made of a special fabric that will protect you from airborne darts from a blowgun, but won't stop a dart if you get jabbed by one.
These are great, I said, thanking him.
At least I wouldn't be surprised, and hopefully, once Ferda was close enough to jab me, I would have the upper hand.
The new clothes hung on my small frame. I rolled up the sleeves and added a belt to keep the pants from falling down. A brief smile touched Valak's lips. They were mine. I'm not the best seamstress.
I packed my backpack with care, taking only critical supplies, which included the theobroma, the items Esau gave me, my grapple and rope, an apple, and my bow. Ferda hadn't specified to come unarmed.
My lockpicks went into my hair, and I strapped my switchblade onto my thigh through the hole cut into my pants pocket.
Valak had thought ahead.
He might not be the best with a needle and thread, but he knew the art of combat like no other.
We reviewed our plan, and I told him about Kiki.
Sneaking through both the keep's and citadel's gates without a large animal is hard enough, love, Valak said. I'll manage. Trust me.
He gave me a flat stare, showing no emotion.
I'll take Kiki out to the plains and give you time to get through the citadel's gate before heading toward the meeting site, I said. Once Opal is out of harm's way and Ferda is visible, that's the sign to move in.
Valak nodded.
Count on it.
I put on my cloak and left.
4 hours remained until midnight.
A few people moved about the campus.
The torches along the walkways had been lit, and students hurried through the cool night air, heading to an evening class or to meet up with friends. I was a stranger among them, a shadow, watching and yearning to join them, wishing that my worries only focused on studying for one of Bane Bloodgood's history quizzes.
Kiki waited for me in her stall.
I opened the door and let her out.
Getting onto her back with a cloak and loaded backpack became an impossible task. I pulled a step stool over and used it.
Need practice, Kiki said. No stool in wild.
Later, I agreed. Kiki glanced back at Iris's tower as we started toward the keep's gate.
Magic, lady.
The guilt I had suppressed about not telling Iris about the exchange threatened to break free.
She won't be happy.
Kicking mad. Give Magic Lady peppermints.
I laughed, thinking I would need more than peppermints to repair the damage.
Peppermint sweet on both sides, Kiki said.
Cryptic horse advice?
Are you sure Moon Man isn't your father?
Moon Man smart.
I pondered her words, trying to decipher the true meaning.
Before we reached the keep's gate, I pulled a magic thread to me and projected my awareness.
Two guards watched the gate.
Bored, one guard thought of the end of his shift with longing.
The other considered what he would eat for a late dinner.
A magician dozed on a stool. I sent the magician into a deeper slumber.
And using the guard's desires, I encouraged them to focus on something other than the horse and rider passing beneath the gate. As one soldier scanned the sky to see how far the South Star had moved, the other rummaged around the guardhouse looking for something to eat. Both failed to notice us, and we soon passed out of sight.
Kiki walked quietly through the citadel.
No farrier would go near a sandseed horse. The breed's strong disdain for metal shoes was well known.
Four guards watched the citadel's gates. Once again, I distracted the guards as we crossed.
When we were out of sight of the gate, Kiki broke into a gallop and we headed into the Avibian Plains. When we could no longer see the road or the citadel, Kiki slowed to a walk. My thoughts returned to Kiki's words about peppermints.
For the plan to work tonight, we each had to do our part.
Both sides needed to be sweet. She had also claimed trust equaled peppermints.
Did she refer to Iris instead of Valak? The answer bloomed in my mind. I didn't know whether to feel smart for figuring out Kiki's advice, or feel like a simpleton for having a horse tell me the right thing to do.
Iris, I called in my mind.
Yelena, what's the matter?
I took a deep breath, steadied my nerves, and told her my plans.
Silence, long and empty, followed my confession.
You'll die, she finally said. You're no longer my student. I'll link with the other master magicians and we will stop you before you get to him.
I expected her response. Her anger and immediate censure were the reasons I hadn't wanted to tell her about the exchange.
Iris, you told me I would die before. Remember when we first met in Ixia's snake forest? She hesitated.
Yes.
I was in an impossible position. My magical powers were uncontrolled. You were threatening to kill me, and I had been poisoned by Valak. Each course of action from that point seemed to lead to my eventual death. But I asked you to give me some time, and you did. You hardly knew me, yet you trusted me enough to let me figure a way out.
I might not know the ways of Citya, but I'm an old hand at dealing with impossible situations.
Think about that before you call the others. Another long, painful silence. I withdrew my connection to Iris, needing to focus my attention on tonight's task. Kiki stopped within a mile of Blood Rock. I sensed the sand seed's subtle magic.
The protection lacked the strength of the one that covered their camp, but it resembled a thin web waiting to catch its prey unaware. A magician with the proper magical defense in place could avoid detection by the sand seeds, but if the clan intensified their power, they would then sense the magician's presence. Their magic would attack the interloper. I breathed a small sigh of relief, knowing Valak's immunity would make him undetectable. I slid off Kiki's back.
Stay out of sight, I told her.
Stay in wind. Keep smell strong, Kiki instructed.
I hid in the tall grass, giving Valak time to catch up. Kiki had reached this point in an hour, but it would take him an extra hour to get into position. When I felt I had waited long enough, I started walking toward Blood Rock, trusting that Valak would approach the exchange site from the opposite direction.
Rabbit, Kiki said. Good.
I smiled. She must have flushed a bunny from its burrow. The moon's bright light shone on the long stalks of grass. A slight breeze blew, and I watched as my moon's shadow skimmed over the rippling surface. Iris's voice reached my mind.
You're on your own.
Then her mental connection with me severed, destroying our student-mentor link. My head throbbed with the sudden emptiness. My heart squeezed out little spikes of panic. I calmed my nerves with the reminder that both Valak and Kiki trailed me. When I drew closer to the meeting point, I stopped and took off my cloak. I rolled the garment up and hid it in a clump of tall grass. Pulling Esau's theobroma pill from my pack, I placed it between my back teeth. My mouth felt awkward, and I hoped I didn't accidentally bite into the pill. I continued onward. The dark shape of the rock filled the land before me. Rays of moonlight filtered through the clouds as I peered into the semi-darkness, searching for some sign of Ferda and Opal. Relief poured through my body when I saw Opal step out from behind Blood Rock. She hurried toward me, and only when she left the shadows could I see the terror on her face. Her eyes looked swollen, her pale skin blotchy from crying. I scanned the area with my magic, feeling for Ferda as my gaze hunted for him. Opal threw herself into my arms, sobbing. Too easy. Wouldn't he want my promise to go with him before releasing her? The girl hugged me so tight she pinched my skin. Ferda still didn't appear. I pulled her away, planning to guide her back to the Citadel.
I'm so sorry, Yelena, she cried, and ran away.
I spun around, expecting Ferda to be standing there gloating.
No one.
Confused, I moved to follow Opal, but my feet would not obey me. Stumbling, I fell as my body lost all sensation. Chapter 30 I lay on the ground as the paralysis swept through my body with amazing speed. I had only a second to realize that I'd been hit with curare before the drug froze all my muscles. Only a second to bite down on the theobroma pill before my jaw seized, swallowing just a drop of the antidote. Lying on my side, I saw Opal in the gray moonlight running toward the Citadel. My helpless position was the direct result of my appalling overconfidence. By focusing on the danger from Ferda either from his magic or from the curare, I didn't prepare for an attack by Opal. She had jabbed me, apologized, and run off. A muted fear pulsed in my body. The curare seemed to dull my emotions as well as my magic. I felt as if I wore a heavy, wet woolen cap around my head. Behind me, I heard the slight crunch of footsteps coming closer. I waited for Valak. Would he pounce when Ferda drew closer to me? The footsteps stopped, and my view changed. Without feeling anything, I was pulled over onto my back. My head spun for a moment before I could focus on the night sky. I couldn't move my gaze, but I could still blink. I couldn't speak, yet I could breathe. I couldn't move my mouth or tongue, but I could swallow. Odd. When a face entered my view, I remembered to be scared again. Until surprise eclipsed my fear for a moment. A woman with long hair peered down at me. She wore a robe, and I could see faint lines had been drawn or tattooed on her neck. When she flaunted a knife and brought the metal tip close to my eyes, the air suddenly seemed thick and hard to draw into my straining lungs.
"Should I kill you now?" she asked.
Her accent sounded familiar. She cocked her head to the side in amusement.
"No comment? Not to worry. I won't kill you now. Not when you won't feel any pain. You need to suffer greatly before I'll end your pain for good."
The woman stood and walked away.
I searched my memory. Did I know her? Why would she want to kill me?
Perhaps she worked with Ferda. Her language matched his, but without the lilt.
Where was Valak? He should have witnessed my predicament.
I heard a rubbing sound and a thump. Then a strange disorientation made me realize that the woman dragged me. My world tilted and straightened. She brandished a rope, and I guessed by the brief glimpses and sounds that she had pulled me onto a cart and was tying me to it. She jumped off, and after a moment, I heard her call to a horse. The creaking of the wheels and steady clomping of the horse were the only indication that we moved. From the swish and whack of grass, I guessed we were headed deeper into the Avibian plains.
Where was Valak?
I worried and waited, and even slept. Every time some of the melting theobroma reached the back of my throat, I swallowed. Would I get enough to counteract the curare? By the time the woman stopped, a pale sheen of dawn had wedged into the night sky. Feeling began to return to my limbs. I moved my tongue, trying to swallow more of the theobroma. Pain flared in my wrists and ankles. My hands and feet were stiff and cold. I had been tied spread-eagle on the hard cart. My ability to connect with the power source started to wake when the woman climbed onto the cart. My thoughts scattered when I saw her holding a long, thin needle. I banished the fear and drew power to me.
"Oh, no, you don't," she declared, then jabbed me with a needle. "We need to reach the void before I let you feel. Then you can feel cold steel slicing into your skin."
I thought that this would be an excellent time for Valak to arrive. But when he failed to appear, I said, "Who?" before the drug numbed all my muscles.
"You don't know me, but you knew my brother very well. Don't worry, you'll know the reason for your suffering soon enough."
She hopped off the cart and the familiar sounds of movement started again. "Any time now, Valak," I thought. But as the sun progressed through the sky, my hopes for a rescue faded. Something must have happened to keep Valak from following me. Perhaps Iris's message last night about being alone had been a warning. Various horrible scenarios about Valak played in my mind. To distract myself, I wondered about Kiki. Was she near? Would she follow my scent? With my magic ability paralyzed, would she know I needed her help? The sun hovered above the horizon when the cart stopped again. A burning sensation in my fingertips meant the curare started to wear off. Soon enough, cramps, pain, and cold air racked my body. I shivered and gulped the rest of Esau's antidote, preparing for another jab. But it didn't come. Instead, the woman climbed onto the cart and stood over me. She spread her arms wide.
"Welcome to the void, or in your case, welcome to hell."
In the fading light, I saw her gray eyes clearly. The strong features of her face reminded me of someone, but I couldn't think. My head ached and my mind felt dull. I reached for a thread of power, but found dead air. Nothing. A smug smile spread on the woman's lips.
"This is one of the few places in Cydia where there is a hole in the blanket of power.
No power means no magic."
"Where are we?"
I asked. My voice sounded rough.
"The Davian Plateau."
"Who are you?" All humor dropped from the woman's face. She appeared to be around 30 years old. Her black hair reached past her waist. She rolled the sleeves up on her sand-colored cloak, revealing the purple animal tattoos that covered her arms.
"You haven't figured it out?" Have you killed that many men?
4 men, but I'm not averse to killing a woman. I gave her a pointed stare.
You're really not in the position to be bragging or boasting.
She pulled her knife from a pocket of her cloak.
I thought quick.
Of the 4, Rayad was the only one I knew well. The others I had killed in self-defense. I didn't even know their names.
Still don't know?
She moved closer to me.
No.
Rage flamed in her gray eyes. That expression jolted my memory.
Mogken.
The magician that had kidnapped me and tried to rob me of my soul. He was known as Kangam in Sitya. Kangam deserved to die, I said. Valak had made the killing blow, but Iris and I had first caught the magician in a web of magical power. I had not included him in my count, but I admitted being responsible for his death. Fury twisted the woman's expression. She drove her knife into my right forearm, and then pulled it out just as fast. Pain exploded at my arm. I screamed.
Who am I?
She asked. My arm burned, but I met her gaze. You're Kangam's sister. She nodded.
My name's Alea Davian.
That was not one of the clan names. She understood my confusion and said,
I used to be a sand seed.
She spat the clan name out.
They're stuck in the past. We are more powerful than the rest of Sitya, yet the sand seeds are content to wander the plains, dream and weave stories. My brother had a vision on how we could rule Sitya.
But he was helping Brazel to take over Ixia. I found it hard to follow her logic when my blood poured from the stab wound.
A first step. Gain control of the northern armies, then attack Sitya. But you ruined that, didn't you?
Seemed like a good idea at the time. Alea sliced her knife along my left arm, drawing a line from my shoulder to my wrist.
You'll learn to regret that decision before I cut your throat, just like you did to my brother.
Pain coursed through my arms, but a strange annoyance that she had ruined Valak's special shirt tugged at my mind. Alea raised the knife again, aiming for my face. I thought fast. Are you living in the plateau? I asked.
Yes. We broke from the sand seeds and declared a new clan. The Davians will conquer Sitya. We will no longer have to steal to survive.
How?
Another member is on a power quest.
Once he completes the ritual, he will be more powerful than all 4 master magicians together. Did you kill Tula? I asked. When she squinted in confusion, I added, Opal's sister.
No. My cousin had that pleasure.
Alea had a family connection to Ferda. He must be the one on the quest, which led me to the question. Who was Ferda targeting for the final ritual? It could be any girl with some magical abilities and he could be anywhere. And we only had 2 days to find him. I pulled against the ropes with the sudden need to move. Alea smiled in satisfaction.
Not to worry. You won't be around for the cleansing of Sitya. However, you will be around for a little longer.
She pulled out her needle and jabbed into the cut on my arm. I yelped.
I don't like wasting your blood on this wagon. We have a special frame set up so I can collect your red life and make good use of it.
Alea hopped off the cart. The curare began to dull the pain in my arms, but full paralysis didn't grip my body. Esau's antidote must be working. The presence of void meant I didn't have to worry about my mind being open to magical influences. However, being tied to the cart and unarmed, I didn't know if my body would be in any condition to fight Alea. Searching for my pack and bow would reveal to her that I could move. So I clamped my teeth down to keep them from chattering and to remind myself to stay still. I heard a thump, and the cart tilted. My feet now pointed toward the ground as my head came up. With this new angle, I could see a wooden frame just a few feet away. Made of thick beams, the frame had manacles and chains hanging from the top with some kind of pulley rigged to them. Under the frame lay a metal basin. I guessed that the victim stood in the basin. Beyond the frame spread the vivid colors of the flat Davian plateau.
The patchwork of yellows, tans, and browns seemed so soothing in comparison to the torture device. My heart began beating in a fast tempo. I kept my eyes staring straight ahead when Alea came into view. A few inches taller than me, Alea's chin reached my eye level. She had removed her cloak and revealed her blue pants and short-sleeved V-neck blouse that had white discs sewn onto it, making it look as if she wore fish scales. A leather weapon belt circled her waist.
"Feeling better?" she asked.
"Let's make sure."
She poked the tip of her blade into my right thigh. Concentrating so hard on not reacting, I took a moment to realize the thrust hadn't hurt. The tip of Alea's knife had hit my switchblade holder. Still strapped to my thigh, I wondered if the weapon remained inside it. Alea considered my expression for many frantic heartbeats. If she suspected I could move, then all would be lost.
"Your clothes are strange," she said finally. "They're thick and resist my knife. I will remove them and keep them.
They would make a fine reminder of our time together." She stepped over to the frame and grabbed the manacles that hung down, pulling. The wheel on the pulley spun and let more chain through until the cuffs reached my cart.
"You're too heavy for me to lift.
Good thing my brother added that pulley so I can easily yank you into place." She unlocked the metal cuffs and opened them wide. My time to act approached. If she was smart, she would secure my wrists in the cuffs before untying my feet. Once my arms were locked into the frame, I would be helpless again. I would only have a brief window of opportunity, and I planned to risk everything on a guess. She leaned over with her knife and cut the rope holding my right arm to the side of the cart. I let it drop to my side as if it were a dead weight, hoping she would untie my other arm before fastening them. Instead, Alea put her knife in her belt and reached for my arm. I plunged my hand into my pocket and grabbed for my switchblade. Alea froze for a moment in shock. My fingers found the smooth handle and I almost laughed aloud with relief. Yanking the weapon out, I knocked aside her arm and triggered the blade. She drew her knife. Before she could step back, I plunged my blade into her lower abdomen. Grunting in surprise, she aimed her weapon at my heart. She staggered a bit as she leaned forward to strike, and I felt cold steel bite deep into my stomach. Alea fell, sitting hard on the ground. She hunched over my switchblade. I gasped for breath, trying to keep from passing out. Pain flamed up my back and gripped my insides like a tight vice. Alea pulled my blade from her guts and dropped it onto the ground. Crawling over to her cloak, she retrieved a vial of liquid from one of the pockets. She opened it, dipped her finger in, and rubbed the liquid into her stab wound. Curare. Lurching to her feet, she walked back to me. She studied my condition in silence. The curare she had used must have been diluted in order for her to move.
"Take my knife out to free yourself, and you will bleed to death," she said with grim satisfaction. "Leave it in, and you will eventually die.
Either way, you're in the middle of the plains with no one to help you and no magic to heal you." She shrugged. "Not what I had planned, but the results will be the same." "What about your problem?" I asked, huffing with the effort.
"I have my horse and my people close by. Our healer will cure me, and I will be back in time to watch your final moments."
She moved past the cart. After some rustling and grunting, she clicked at her horse, and I heard the familiar thumping of hooves. As my vision began to blur, I had to agree with Alea. My position hadn't improved, but at least I'd denied her the satisfaction of torturing me. The intense pain made concentrating difficult.
Do I pull the knife, or keep it in?
Time passed and I drifted in and out of consciousness. I roused when the drum of a galloping horse reached my ears. I hadn't made my decision, and Alea was returning to gloat. Closing my eyes to avoid seeing her smug expression, I heard a whinny. The sound soothed my pain as if I'd been dosed with curare. I opened my eyes and saw Kiki's face. My prospects looked better, but I wasn't sure I could communicate with Kiki. "Knife," I said aloud. My throat burned with thirst. "Get me the knife."
Looking over to my switchblade on the ground, I then stared at Kiki. I let my eyes and head move from one to the other.
Please.
She turned an eye in the right direction, then walked over and grasped the handle with her teeth. Smart indeed. I held out my free hand and she placed the weapon in my palm. Kiki, if this works out, I said, I'll feed you all the apples and peppermints that you want. Fresh waves of pain coursed through my body as I twisted to cut the rope around my left wrist. When the strand severed, I fell to the ground, but had enough sense to land on my elbows and knees, keeping the knife from plunging deeper into my stomach. After an eternity, I reached back and cut the rope around my feet. I probably would have curled up on the ground and given in to the release of unconsciousness, but Kiki huffed at me and nudged my face with her nose. Looking up, I thought her back seemed as unattainable as the clouds in the sky. No step stool in the wild. I laughed, but it came out as a hysterical cry. Kiki moved away. She returned with my pack in her mouth, setting it down next to me. I gave her a wry smile. Whenever I rode her, I always had my pack with me. She probably thought I needed my backpack to climb onto her back. Pawing with impatience, she pushed the pack closer to me. I had mentioned apples. Perhaps she wanted the one inside. I opened it. Smart girl. I found the curare that I had forgotten about. Planning to use the drug against Ferda, I had packed one of Esau's vials. I rubbed a tiny drop into my wound. The drug soothed my pain. Sighing with relief, I tried to sit up. My arms and legs felt wooden and heavy, but they moved in the right ways. The theobroma in my body kept the curare from freezing all my muscles. It was an effort to put my backpack on. Fear of Alea's return motivated me, and I stood on wobbly legs. Kiki bent her front legs down to her knees. I looked at her askance. No step stool? She wickered with impatience. I laced my fingers in her mane and swung a leg over her back. She lurched to her feet and broke into a smooth, ground-eating stride. I knew the instant we left the void. Magic encompassed me like a pool of water, but I soon felt drowned by the amount. An unfortunate side effect of the theobroma opened my mind to the magical assault. On entering the Avibian Plains, the Sandseed's protective spells rushed me. Unable to block the magic, I fell. Strange dreams, images, and colors swirled around me. Kiki spoke to me with Iris's voice. Valak steeled himself as a noose wrapped around his neck, his arms tied behind his back. Ari and Jenko huddled by a fire in a grassy clearing, alarmed and uneasy. They had never been lost before. My mother clung to the upper branches of a tree as it swung wildly in a storm. The smell of curare filled my nose, and theobroma coated my mouth. Alea's knife had been driven deeper into my abdomen when I had hit the ground. In my mind's eye, I saw the torn muscles, the tear in my stomach with blood and acid gushing out. Yet I couldn't focus on my magic to heal the wound. Valak's thoughts reached me. He fought the soldiers around him with his feet, but someone pulled on the rope and it tightened around his neck. Regret pulsed in his heart. Sorry, love. I don't think we're going to make it this time. Chapter 31.
No, I yelled to him. Stay alive. Think of something.
I'll stay if you will, he countered. Damn frustrating, man. In exasperation, I gathered the twisting images and magic that threatened to overwhelm me. I wrung them and wrestled the magic. Images swirled around me like snowflakes in a blizzard. Theobroma coursed through my blood and enhanced my perceptions, making the magic tangible. The threads of power slipped through my hands like a coarse blanket. Sweating and panting with the effort to hold on to the magic, I yanked Alea's knife from my stomach and pulled magic toward the wound. Laying my hands over my abdomen, I covered the warm torrent of blood with power. Concentrating, I sent my mind's eye toward the damage. I grabbed a thread of the magic swirling around me and used it to stitch close the rip in my stomach. I repaired my torn abdominal muscles and knitted my skin together. A quick glance at my stomach revealed an ugly red ridge of puckered flesh that caused a sharp stab of pain whenever I drew breath. But the wound was no longer life-threatening. I kept my end of the bargain. I desperately hoped Valak kept his. Exhaustion tugged at my consciousness, and I would have fallen asleep, but Kiki nudged me. "Come," she said in my mind. I opened my eyes. Tired.
Bad smell. Go.
We were out of the void, but we must be close to Alea's people.
Grab tail, she instructed.
Clutching the long strands of her tail, I pulled myself into a standing position. Kiki knelt, and I mounted her back. She took off, breaking into her gust of wind gait. I hung on and tried to stay awake. The plains blurred past as the sun set. The icy air bit at my skin. When she slowed, I blinked, trying to focus on my surroundings. Still in the plains, but I saw a campfire ahead.
Make noise. Not scare rabbit.
Rabbits? Sudden hunger made my stomach growl. I did have an apple, but I'd promised that to Kiki. She snorted in amusement, whinnied, and stopped. I glanced past her head and saw two men blocking the path. The moonlight shone off their swords. Ari and Jenko. I called to them, and they sheathed their weapons as Kiki drew closer. Rabbit? Not rabbit man?
Too quick for a man.
Thank fate, Ari cried. Seeing how I drooped over Kiki's neck, Ari pulled me off and carried me to their campfire, setting me down as if I was as fragile as an egg. The sudden wish that Ari was my real brother overcame me. Even as an 8-year-old, I'd bet Ari never would have let me be kidnapped. Jenko feigned boredom.
Going off and getting all the glory again, he said. I don't know why we even bothered to come to this crazy land. Your trail marks didn't even have the decency to go anywhere but in circles, he grumped.
Don't like being lost, Jenko? I teased. He harumphed and crossed his arms. Don't worry. Your skills are still keen. You're in the Avibian Plains. There's a protective magic here that confuses the mind.
Magic, he spat. Another good reason to stay in Ixia.
Ari sat me by the fire. You look terrible. Here. He wrapped my cloak around his shoulders. Where? We found it in the plains, Ari explained. Then he frowned. Valak had asked us to back him up last night. We followed him, but they ambushed him at the Citadel's gates. Cahill and his men, I said. He nodded, then began inspecting the cuts on my arms. How did they know where to find him? I asked.
Captain Marek is a tracker of some renown, Ari said.
Seems he had dealings with Valak before. He is the only soldier to have escaped from the commander's dungeon. He must have been waiting for the perfect opportunity. Ari shook his head. Valak's capture presented a dilemma.
Help Valak or help you, Jenko said.
I think he suspected something might happen to him and didn't want you unprotected. So we stuck to the plan and followed you.
Ari handed me a jug of water. I gulped the liquid.
Not that we did any good, Jenko huffed. When we reached the meeting site, the horse and cart were gone, and we figured we would track you. She had to stop sometime. But...
You lost your way, I finished for him. Ari probed the deep gash on my right forearm.
Ow!
Hold still, Ari said. Jenko, get my med kit for my pack. These cuts need to be cleaned and sealed. If I'd had any energy, I would have healed the wounds on my arms with magic. Instead, I endured Ari's administrations and admonishments. When he pulled out the pot of Rand's sealing glue, I asked him about the commander's new chef to distract myself from the pain.
Since Rand never made it to Brazel's for the transfer of cooks, the commander promoted one of Rand's kitchen staff.
Ari frowned. I grimaced as Ari applied the glue to my cut more from remembering Rand than from the burning in my arm. Rand had lost his life protecting me. But I wouldn't have been in danger if he hadn't set me up for an ambush in the first place.
The food hasn't been the same, Jenko said with a sigh. Everyone is losing weight.
When Ari finished wrapping my arms, he pulled something from the fire.
Jenko got a rabbit.
He broke off a piece and handed it to me.
You need to eat something.
That reminded me. Kiki needs... I moved to stand up. Jenko waved me down.
I'll take care of her.
Do you...
Yeah, I grew up on a farm.
I had gnawed every bit of meat off the rabbit's bone when Janko came back covered with horsehair. He seemed to be in a better mood.
She's beautiful, he said about Kiki. I've never had a horse stand so patiently to be rubbed down, and she wasn't even tied.
I told him about the honor she gave him by changing his name from Rabbit Man to Rabbit. Unprecedented. He gave me an odd look.
Talking horses. Magic. Crazy southerners.
He shook his head. He might have said more, but I could no longer stay awake. The next morning, I told my friends about Alea and the clan on the plateau. They wanted to go after her, but I reminded them about Valak and the need to find Ferda. My heart lurched when I thought of Valak. Even with a night of sleep, I still didn't have enough energy to find out what had happened to him. The rest had roused me. We need to get to the Citadel, I said, standing.
Do you know where we are?
Ari asked.
Somewhere in the plains, I said, shouldering my backpack. Some magician you are, Janko said. Do you even know which direction the Citadel is?
No. Kiki came and stood next to me. I grabbed her mane.
How about a boost? I asked Janko.
He muttered under his breath, but offered his linked hands for my boot. When I had settled onto her back, I looked down at him. Kiki knows where to go. Can you keep up?
He grinned. This rabbit can run.
Ari and Janko packed their gear and we set off at a trot. All those laps around the commander's castle had kept them in top physical condition. We reached the road, and I heard Janko curse and grumble about being lost only a mile away. When we approached the Citadel's gates, we encountered the four master magicians. They all sat on horseback. A well-armed cavalry team accompanied them. I smiled at Rose Featherstone's look of astonishment, but sobered at Iris's cold stare. "Why are you here?" I asked.
"We were coming to either rescue you or kill you," Zatora said.
She flashed Rose an annoyed glance. I met Iris's gaze, questioning. She turned away and blocked my efforts to reach her mind. Even though I had known she would shun me for going off alone, her actions still tore at my heart. Not bothering to conceal the satisfaction in her voice, Rose said,
"Because of your dangerous disregard for the well-being of Citia, you have been expelled."
The least of my worries. "Is Opal safe?" I asked the magicians. Bane Bloodgood nodded.
"She told us a woman held her. Was she connected to the killer?"
"No. We still need to find Ferda. He doesn't want me. He must have taken someone else. Has anyone been reported missing?" My announcement caused a considerable stir. Everyone had assumed that Ferda was holding Opal. Now they needed to change tactics.
"We've been searching for him for 2 weeks," Rose said, putting a stop to the chatter. "What makes you think we can find him now?"
"The last victim would not have been kidnapped," Bane said. "Let us go back and discuss this. Yelena, you'll be safest in the keep. We will talk about your future when this whole mess is resolved."
The magicians headed toward the keep. Ari, Janko, and I followed. I thought about Bane's comment. My future would be nothing without Valak. I caught up to Bane and asked about him. Bane gave me a stern look, and I felt his magic press against my mental barrier. I relaxed my guard and heard his voice in my mind.
"Best not to talk aloud about this child. Cahill and his men captured him 2 nights ago, but Cahill would not release Valak to the counselors or master magicians."
I felt Bane's disapproval over Cahill's actions, and I had to quell my desire to find Cahill and skewer him with his own sword.
"Cahill tried to hang Valak yesterday at dusk, but Valak escaped."
Bane seemed impressed.
"We have no idea where he is now."
I thanked Bane and slowed Kiki, letting the others go ahead. I savored my relief that Valak was alive. When Ari and Janko caught up to me, I relayed the information to them. When we reached the council hall, Ari and Janko headed toward the guest quarters. Kiki picked up her pace, and we joined the others. I thought about where Valak might have gone. Back to Ixia seemed the safest and most logical course, but I knew Valak would stay nearby until Ferda was caught. That led me to consider who would be Ferda's next victim. He had been working in the keep where there were many young female magicians just learning to control their magic. Since the full moon would rise tomorrow night, he would probably need a few days to prepare. The master magicians couldn't locate him with magic, but they might be able to contact the girl with him. But how to find her? Just past the keep's gate, the master magicians dismounted, handed their horses to the guards, and started for the keep's administration building. I followed, but Rose stopped me at the base of the steps.
You're confined to your quarters. We will deal with you later, she promised.
I had no intention of obeying her, but I knew they wouldn't let me into the meeting room. So before Bane could mount the steps to the building, I touched his arm. The killer probably seduced one of the young first years to come with him, I told him. If everyone takes a barrack, you can find out who's missing and try to communicate with her.
Excellent, Bane said. Now go rest, child. And do not worry. We will do all that we can to find the killer.
I nodded. Fatigue wrapped around me like a stone cloak, and Bane's order to rest made sense. Before heading toward my rooms, I made a slight detour to the keep's guest suite. My father answered the door. He crushed me in his muscular arms.
Are you all right? Did my pill work?
Like a charm. I kissed him on the cheek. You saved my life. He ducked his head.
I've made some more for you just in case.
I smiled with gratitude. Looking past his shoulder, I asked, Where's mother?
In her favorite oak tree by the pasture. She was doing so well until...
He gave me a sardonic grin. I know. I'll find her. I stood at the bottom of the oak, feeling as if I'd been run over by a horse. Mother, I called.
Yelena, come up. Come up where it's safe.
No place is safe, I thought. The events of the last 2 days began to overwhelm me. Too many problems, too much riding on me. My encounter with Alea proved that even when I felt confident that I could take care of a situation, I really didn't know what I was doing. If Alea had checked me for weapons, I would be standing ankle deep in my own blood.
Come down! I need you! I cried.
I sank to the ground and wrapped my arms around my legs as tears poured from my eyes. With a rustle and creak of branches, my mother appeared beside me. I transformed into a 6-year-old child, flung myself into her arms, and sobbed. She comforted me, helped me to my room, gave me a handkerchief and a glass of water. Tucking me into bed, she kissed me on my forehead. When she went to leave, I grabbed her hand.
Please stay.
Mother smiled, took off her cloak, and lay next to me. I fell asleep in her arms. The next morning she brought me breakfast in bed. I protested about the extravagance, but she stopped me. I have 14 years of mothering to catch up on. Indulge me. Even though the plate was loaded with food, I ate every bit and drained the tea. Sweet cakes are my favorite. I know, she replied with a smug smile. I asked one of the servers in the dining hall, and she remembered that every time they cooked sweet cakes, your eyes would light up. She took the empty tray. You should go back to sleep. Pearl went into the other room. I could have easily complied, but I needed to find out if the others had discovered who was missing. Unable to stay in bed, I decided to get a quick bath before finding Bane. Come to our suite when you're done at the bathhouse, Pearl said. Once your father told me what's been going on with this killer and the curare, I thought of something that might help you. It may have aided you yesterday, she huffed. I'm not a delicate sapling. You and Esau don't need to keep things from me. And that includes Valak. She put her hands on her hips, wrinkling the smooth lines of her blue-green dress.
How?
I sputtered. I'm not deaf. The dining hall buzzed with conversation about you and Valak, and Valak's escape from Cahill. She put a hand to her throat, but then she took a deep breath. I know I tend to overreact about some things and go running for the trees, she smiled ruefully. Valak has the most horrible reputation, but I trust you. When you have some time, you need to educate me about him. Yes, mother, I said, and also promised to stop by their suite after my bath. It was the middle of the morning, so the bathhouse was almost empty. Washing, I thought about how much I would tell my mother about Valak. When I finished drying off, I changed and headed toward the guest suite. Dax intercepted me. His usual jovial face was taut with worry, and the dark smudges under his eyes made it look as if he hadn't slept in a while.
"Have you seen Gelsey?" he asked.
"Not since the New Beginnings feast." So much had happened since that night. The semester had not gone as I had imagined. Nothing since coming to Citia had gone as I had imagined. Wasn't she working on some special project for Master Bloodgood?
Yes, she was experimenting with the Bellwood plant. But I haven't seen her in days, and I can't find her anywhere.
His words struck me like Alea's knife. I gasped.
What?
His green eyes widened in alarm.
Plant?
Where? With who? The questions tumbled from my mouth.
I already checked the greenhouses many times. She worked with one of the gardeners. Maybe we could ask him?
Him. My heart twisted. I knew who Gelsey was with. Chapter 32.
Me? But I've never linked with Gelsey.
Dax's drawn face took on a wild, fearful expression. I had taken Dax back to my rooms. We sat together on the couch. Don't worry. I've only worked with her once, but you've known her for a year. I'll find her through you, I hoped. Relax, I instructed. I took his hand in mine. Think of her. Finding a thread of magic, I reached toward his mind. A horrible vision of Gelsey, bloody and terrified, filled my mind. Dax, don't imagine where she might be. Think of her at the New Beginnings feast. The image transformed into a smiling young lady wearing a soft green gown. I felt Dax's thrill when he held her hand and guided her while they danced. I sent my magic to Gelsey, trying to see Dax from her mind. She gazed up at him. They had always danced together at the feast, but this time felt different. Her skin tingled where he had touched her, and a warmth pulsed in her chest.
Gelsey, I called, pulling her into the memory. What a lovely evening, she thought. How things have changed. Dax seemed distant after that night, preoccupied. Gelsey, where are you? I asked.
Shame flared.
I've been a fool. No one must know. Please, tell no one.
Fear trembled through her mind.
You were deceived by a cunning sorcerer. No one will hold that against you. Where are you? He will punish me.
She tried to pull away. I showed her Dax's concern for her, his hunt through the keep.
Don't let your captor win, I pleaded.
Gelsey showed me a bare room. She was naked and tied to metal spikes that had been driven into the wooden floor. Strange symbols had been painted on the floor and walls. Pain throbbed from between her legs, and the multiple cuts along her arms and legs burned. He hadn't needed to drug her with curare.
I loved him, she said. I gave myself to him.
Instead of the wonderful, loving experience she had expected, Ferda tied her down, beat her, and raped her. Then he bled her, collecting the blood in an earthen bowl. Show me where you are, I instructed. Beyond the room was the living area, and outside I could see a courtyard with a white jade sculpture of 15 horses.
Have faith, I said. We'll be there. He'll know. He has surrounded the neighborhood with a magical shield. He knows when someone passes through, and if he feels threatened, he'll complete the ritual.
Doesn't he need to wait until the full moon tonight?
No.
The note left by Alea had originally set the exchange for the full moon, so everyone had not only assumed Ferda sent the note, but that the phase of the moon was critical for the ritual.
He had to move many times, Gelsey said. I had thought it exciting. I didn't know he was the one the masters were searching for. He led me to believe he was on a secret mission for the master magicians.
We'll find a way, I promised.
Hurry.
I withdrew my awareness and sat back. Dax stared at me in horror. He had been able to see and hear our conversation.
She will need you when this is over, I told him. We need to tell the masters.
No. My mind raced through options.
But he's strong. You heard Gelsey. He has a shield, Dax said.
All the more reason to go alone. They have been searching for him and he knows them. I think I can get through undetected.
How?
There's no time to explain, but Gelsey will need you close by. Can you meet me in the market in an hour?
Of course.
I jumped up and started gathering supplies. Dax hesitated at the door.
Yelena?
I looked at him.
What happens if you don't stop him?
Fear shone in his green eyes. Then we find Valak. Otherwise, Citya will be Firda's. Dax swallowed his fright and nodded before leaving. I packed my equipment and changed my clothes. Dressed in a plain brown tunic and pants, I would blend in with the regular citizens of the Citadel. Covering my disguise with my cloak, I stopped at my parents' suite on the way out. Leif sat with them in the living room. I ignored him. Father, do you have those extra pills? I asked, hoping he knew I wanted the theobroma. He nodded in understanding and went to retrieve them. While I waited, Mother remembered her little invention she had told me about. She handed me a strange device made of tubes and rubber and explained how to work it.
Just in case, she said.
This is great, I said. You were right about it being useful. She beamed. That's what every mother wants to hear. Leif had said nothing, but I could feel his penetrating stare as if he tasted my intentions. Esau handed me the pills.
Are you coming to lunch with us?
No, I have something I need to do. I'll catch up with you later, I said, giving my father a hug and my mother a kiss on her cheek. A queasy feeling rolled in my stomach. Perhaps I should tell the Master Magicians about Firda and Gelsey? After all, it had been only pure chance that saved me from Alea. I was still discovering what I could do with my magic. And now that I had been expelled, would I be able to fully explore my potential? My mother stopped me just past the door.
Here, she said, handing me my fire amulet. I think you need this. Remember what you endured to win it.
I opened my mouth to protest, but she shook her head.
I want it back.
She squeezed me in a tight hug for a moment. Examining the scarlet prize in the sunlight, I marveled at Pearl's empathy. I tucked the amulet into my pocket and set a brisk pace for the Citadel. After I had passed the keep's gate, I heard pounding footsteps behind me. I whirled, drawing my bow. Leif halted a few feet away. His machete hung from his belt, but he made no move to grab it. Not now, Leif, I said, turning, but he clasped my shoulder and spun me around to face him.
I know where you're going, he said.
Bully for you. I shrugged his hand off. Then you know how time is of the essence. Go back to the keep. I started to walk.
If I do, I'll tell the masters what you're doing.
Truly? You're not very good at telling.
This time I won't hesitate.
Seeing the stubborn set to his broad shoulders, I stopped. What do you want?
To come along.
Why?
You'll need me.
Considering how helpful you were in the jungle 14 years ago, I think I'm better off on my own.
I spat the words at him.
He cringed, but the obstinacy remained in his face.
Either include me in your plans, or I'll follow you and ruin them.
I clamped down on my sudden rage. I didn't have time for this. Fine, but let me warn you that you're going to have to let me inside your mind in order for you to get through Firda's shield. His face paled, but he nodded and fell into step with me as I hurried to the market. Dax waited there. I left Leif with him and hunted for Fisk. He helped a woman barter for a bolt of cloth, but he finished as soon as he recognized me.
Lovely, Yelena. Do you need help?
He asked. I told him what I needed. He smiled and said, Sounds like fun, but...
It's going to cost me, I finished for him.
He raced off to gather his friends. Once Fisk had assembled about 20 children, I explained my plan to them. Make sure you don't go within a block of the courtyard until you hear the signal. Understand? I asked. The children nodded. When I felt satisfied they knew what to do, Fisk's friends scattered and went to get into position. Fisk led Leif and me toward the white jade statue. Dax waited in a side alley far enough away not to touch Firda's shield, but within sight of the second-story windows. I kept my mind open, seeking for the edge of Ferda's magical barrier. About a half a block away from the courtyard, Leaf touched my arm, stopping me.
"It's just ahead," he whispered.
"How do you know?"
"I feel a wall of fire. Don't you?"
"No."
"Then it's good that I came."
I glared, but had no reply. Fisk watched us, waiting for our signal. This was not the time for a fight. I looked at Leaf.
"You have to open your mind to me," I told him. "You have to trust me."
He nodded without hesitating.
"Do it."
I pulled power to me, spinning it around me like a huge curtain. Reaching out, I made contact with Fisk's mind.
"Think of your parents," I instructed, hoping this would work.
The young boy closed his eyes and imagined his parents. I linked to their minds through Fisk, then reached for Leaf's. Leaf's mind resembled a black labyrinth of pain. Guilt, shame, and anger twisted together. I understood why Moonman wanted to help him, but I felt a mean satisfaction at Leaf's remorse. Pushing his dark thoughts aside, I replaced them with Fisk's father's concerns about finding work and supporting his family. I pulled in Fisk's mother's thoughts about her sister's ailing health into my own mind. Holding their personalities and thoughts and Leaf's in my mind, I gave Fisk the signal.
He barked like a dog.
Soon other barks echoed on the marble walls in reply. Fisk's friends would begin the distraction, playing tag and running in and out of the courtyard, and Ferda's magical shield as many times as they could. I took Fisk and Leaf's hands, and the three of us continued on to the courtyard. As we crossed the barrier, I felt the probing heat of an annoyed and powerful magician. He scanned our thoughts, determined we were one of the local beggar families, and dismissed us. When we reached the statue, I released Fisk's parents. They would have an unusual story to tell their friends about how they had felt as if they were in two places at once.
"That's half the battle," I said to Leaf.
He wouldn't meet my eyes. His face was flushed with shame. Irritated, I snapped,
"Now is not the time for this."
He nodded, but still wouldn't meet my gaze. Fisk ran off to join his friends in the game, giving us a few more minutes to get into the house. We approached the house from a side street. The door was locked. I pulled my diamond pick and my tension wrench from my backpack and began working on the lock. Once I had aligned the pins, the lock's tumbler turned and the door swung inward. I heard a surprised huff from Leaf. Then we stepped inside the foyer and closed the door. I shoved my picks into my pocket. Walking without sound, we entered a living area. The normal furniture and decoration seemed out of place. I guess I had expected something wild and weird, something that reflected a killer's mind. Leaf held his machete and I gripped my bow, but I knew they would not protect us. Magic filled the house. It pressed against my skin and I started to sweat. The sounds of the children faded, and we heard the light tread of feet from the floor above us. Connecting with Gelsey's mind, I saw Ferda approach her. He held a brown stone bowl and a long dagger. He wore his red mask and nothing else. She had been fascinated with the tattoos and symbols on his sculpted physique, but now she eyed them with revulsion.
"I'm downstairs," I told her. "What's he going to do?"
"He wants more blood. Wait, or else he will kill me if he hears you."
I had to physically hold on to Leaf when Gelsey started moaning with pain. Handing him one of Esau's theobroma pills, I motioned that he should put it into his mouth. I placed my pack on the floor and quietly removed Pearl's device from my backpack. With my bow in one hand and the device in the other, I waited at the bottom of the staircase with Leaf. Finally, we heard Ferda moving again.
"He's gone,"
Gelsey said with relief. My stomach tightened with apprehension. I pulled power to me to strengthen my mental defenses. A mistake. Ferda felt the draw, and I could sense his growing alarm.
"Now,"
I whispered to Leaf. We rushed up the stairs, taking them two at a time. Ferda waited for us on the landing. We skittered to a stop on the top step. An amused smile quirked Ferda's lips before he pressed them together with concentration. Revulsion and terror welled up my throat at the sight of him, and I thought I would vomit as Tula's horrible memories filled my mind. The wave of his magic crashed against us. I grabbed the railing to keep from plummeting down the stairs, Leaf jerked beside me, but remained upright.
Was that it?
I glanced at Ferda. His eyes were closed. Moving toward him, I raised Pearl's device.
Yelena, stop, Leaf said.
His voice sounded odd. I looked at Leaf in time to see him swing his machete. Jumping back, I dropped Pearl's device and blocked Leaf's weapon with my bow.
What are you...
I tried to ask, but with the pill between my teeth made it hard to talk.
Leaf spat his pill out and moved to strike again. When those men took my perfect baby sister, I thought I would reclaim my parents' undivided attention.
Leaf's machete sliced toward my neck.
I ducked.
Had his shame and guilt all been an act? Was he working with Ferda this whole time? Pushing aside my stunned disbelief, I jabbed him in the stomach with the end of my bow.
He hunched over and grunted.
Magic pressed on my skin and Leaf straightened with renewed vigor.